Hey, Juan, Capital Call on this 10th day of February. And good morning, Representative Earl Sears. Microphone's pointing at you first, but your name did come up this week in my conversation with the Lieutenant Governor. Good morning.
That does not surprise me, and it surely was the park, correct?
He specifically said, see, I was able to mention the park, so yeah.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome, and thank you for tuning into our radio show.
Which I need to remind the folks that it brought to you by Phillips 66. Thank
Phillips 66, yeah. And we greatly appreciate their support, allowing us to report back to our communities and our districts in regards to what goes on at the state capitol. Well, it was an interesting week. I personally, it's like I never left. It's just amazing. You just show up, and it's just like you were there yesterday in regards to things coming at you and what's going on. But let's go to the number one event, State of the State. The governor had her address. It's a very aggressive budget. There is no question our budget situation with one-time monies. We all understand that. We all get that. But then also the flip side of it is the only way you can come up, really you only have two options. You either have to, in raising revenue, we either have to raise taxes or we have to look at some other places in regards to either consolidation of programs, ending programs, reforming tax credits. But there is no question we have to do that. I will tell you today, I have not picked up a lot of support or people talking about wanting to rush to vote for a tax increase. But again, yesterday was day four. Anything can happen at your state capitol. Trust me, Charlie, anything can happen.
Kevin was in complaining, I think it was Wednesday morning, about all the things the governor would like to put a sales tax on. And I invoked a quote from John Ford.
Right. Well, and my comments in the paper the community read on Sunday wasn't a flippant statement. It just the governor by the Constitution has to present a balanced budget. And I can assure you it's a balanced budget. In fact, has a little bit extra money to spend. But from there, as I said in the paper, the journey begins. The House has a position, the Senate has a position, and the governor has a position. And we will have numerous meetings through the AB chairs, members, caucuses. The governor will weigh in on numerous events. There'll be give and take. There'll be compromise. However, at the end of the day, if the governor still is frustrated with the budget, she does have the ultimate power of vetoing the budget. And then we either have to override the veto, or if we can't do that, then we got to go back in, hammer out ideas. But again, it's very early. But the good news is there's a lot of indicators that the economy's doing better. I mean, this is the first time in a 20-month cycle that we've had an increase. It was only $5 million, but that's $5 million that I'm happy about. Oil is doing better. So again, things are looking up. So it's just not gloom and doom, even though there's close to a $900 million hole. The good news is it's a great state, great people, and we will do our due diligence in dealing with this budget. And I know I always spend my time on the budget because, again, that's been my responsibility for numerous years in budget. This year I'm the tax and revenue chairman, so all tax revenue bills will come through my committee, which will go up to the full AMB. But there's a lot of good policy out there as well that's being pushed this year as well. So, Charlie, we're off to a good start, and it's interesting where things will go.
Okay, thank you very much, and good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Charlie. It's great to be here, and as the junior member of the group, all I have to say is I'm not sure what day of the week it is.
Well, let me cue you in. It is Friday morning, and we're happy you're here.
And we're happy to be in Bartlesville. Senator Ford used to tell me that the prettiest sight that he would ever see is when he got on the road and saw the dome in the rearview mirror. And while I have thoroughly enjoyed this first week, every single bit is fascinating. It was nice to come home yesterday. We hit the ground running in the Senate. As Representative Sears said, the State of the State address is a starting point, not an ending point. I have not heard anything among my colleagues that indicates their desire to do a tax increase. I do not have a list of all the services the governor proposed we should begin to tax. But because I haven't seen it doesn't mean it won't advance, but that's an indicator to me. It wasn't on all of our desks that you all need to be reviewing this because this is going to come up. I had my first committee meeting this meet in Judiciary. We had 14 bills, all substantive, some in conflict with each other. The idea being that if you could stomach them, please advance them so that they can have larger debate on the floor of the Senate, which I did choose to do. They all had to do with the election of justices, the retention of justices, the appointment system that we use in Oklahoma. And again, it is early days, but I saw substantive measures moving very early to try and go ahead and get on down the road. The same thing happened in the Senate this week. We had an Appropriations Committee meeting, which is the entire Senate sitting together. And I was told after this 2.5-hour meeting that it was brutal and unexpected. I thought it was substantive and serious. And as I watched, I sat where I could see everybody's face. I sat over on the edge next to a veteran who could explain things to me if I thought, what's playing out here that isn't on the paper in front of me? And all I can say is it seemed like a giant city council with very high stakes. But unlike the National Senate and Congress, everybody was on point, polite. I, as an Oklahoman, it was such an honor to sit in there, but to see the business of the people be addressed in such a serious way. And we talked about the Real ID Act, and we advanced a bill with the title off so that it can continue to be tweaked before it comes to the floor. It provided for an opt-out for a separate Oklahoma-only ID or driver's license separate from the Real ID. And I believe the way it's written now is that Oklahomans could choose whether or not to go get the Real ID. It wouldn't be imposed upon you and you have to opt out. It would be more, I want the Real ID because I do fly. I do work on federal installations and need to be able to gain that access. And then there was a very long debate about the need for a new state health lab, but the dollar amount put before us without any details got a lot of pushback from the body. So it advanced, but the warning was it's advancing, but we've got to know a whole lot more before a lot of the people in the room would be comfortable. So in terms of workmanlike week, in addition to all the ceremonial things, I was very impressed with the way the Senate operated and really honored to be there.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Congratulations on an optimistic first week. Mr. Dunlap.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, thank you for having me. And I'll continue on in the same vein if we can just move right along.
Sure.
I am impressed with the leadership in both the House and the Senate in their determination to get things accomplished quickly and get things of substance accomplished quickly. The House was set back a little bit this week because of the death of our Speaker's mother. Mm-hmm. We canceled committee meetings on Tuesday, which set my committees back quite a bit. The committee I chair, Children, Youth, and Family Services, had to cancel our meeting. I was due to present a bill on Tuesday and also to be a part of another committee meeting on Tuesday, and all of those were canceled. So it ended up being nice. A long time family friend and former pastor of Bartlesville Bible Church was the pastor of the day in the House of Representatives, and so we made it a family day. My parents came down, and we had a wonderful time catching up with him and hearing about the ministry he's doing. But anyway, on to the state's business. I was able and honored to present a bill in committee this week, which advanced. And that bill is a bill that is sponsored by the group Oklahomans for Life, which is the premier pro-life organization in Oklahoma. And this bill is called the Death Certificate Accuracy Act. So let me explain what it is. There are currently five or six states in the union right now who have physician-assisted suicide. In those states, they don't call it physician-assisted suicide. In those states, they call it a physician-assisted death. Those states are Oregon, Washington, Vermont, California, and Colorado. In those states, when physician-assisted death, as they call it, occurs, on the death certificate, doctors are encouraged to put the underlying terminal illness and not any of the means by which they assisted in the death or the suicide. In Oklahoma, physician-assisted suicide is very unpopular. We passed a bill in previous years regarding the Physician-Assisted Suicide Prevention Act. And so we have a section in our statutes which calls it suicide, which is not what the movement wants. And we have attached to that very strong language prohibiting it. What we wanted to do was we wanted to have a bill that, in the case that by popular referendum, by a court decision, or if at some point in the future the sentiment of Oklahomans change and they put into our state the ability to have physician-assisted suicide, then we want to make sure that we don't repeat the same error that those other states are making, which is not recording the means by which suicide is listed or the death is assisted on the death certificate. This is something that's recommended by the Center for Disease Control. It's very important to them to have accurate death data of everything. Mm-hmm. And so this bill specified that on the death certificate, those means are presented. In a sense, it's a preemptive bill, but I think a very important bill. And my committee members thankfully saw it the same way I saw it and advanced it. And so I'm looking forward to presenting that bill on the floor. And if you have questions about that bill, contact my office. I'm just so honored to present it on behalf of Oklahomans for Life, and I'm pleased at the progress this week on it.
Okay. Just I'm curious more on your comments of chairing a committee. I no doubt it's an honor, but by the same token, I'm just curious how things go for you subjectively.
Okay. Well, we didn't have a committee this week. We had four bills slated to be heard. I scheduled them all before the meeting was canceled. We have since accumulated a few more bills, helping the members as much as possible to understand the bills. And so it facilitates a lot of different conversations, and it's something that I'm honored to be a part of. In my particular committee, I very much enjoy the work because you're getting into things that are going to help families. And you're getting into things that are going to help kids. So this week, a freshman colleague, came in and spoke to me about her passion for adoption. And she wants to present a bill that helps facilitate and expedite the communication between DHS and adoption services. She has a lot of anecdotal evidence that the DHS is not getting information to adoption services, people who are waiting to adopt, in an efficient manner. And so if we can help facilitate that through my committee, I mean, that's a very, very, fulfilling thing.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Mr. Chairman Sears. Well, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay. Well, the only thing I could possibly add, because everybody's captured the essence of how our first week went, there is no question. Both leadership in the House and the Senate made it clear we wanted bills and activity moving very quickly, and we've done that. I had my first committee meeting on Wednesday. I heard 9 bills, and the big one in that committee was, quite frankly, was my bill, and it was regarding the wind power. There is no question that our tax credits that we're paying out to wind is rather lucrative and very generous. And I get that. There's absolutely, it's not a criticism. I mean, they're following the law of the land, what we have on the books, and it's not like they're taking advantage of it. I mean, it's there, and we created it. But now that we're to a point where we are in regards to our finances in the state and our revenues, that we all feel, I say we all, there's a large number that feels that we need to review what we're doing on credits. And so I introduced a bill that sunsetted the wind credits 2 years earlier, and put a cap on the money that we pay out. We still would have to pay them the money, owe them the money, but only X amount of dollars would go up. That helps us retain some of that money that we would give to them, meaning the wind, and to help us in our budget. Well, you can imagine that created a firestorm. But anyway, the bill passed, and it's been very interesting. But again, I think I've said this so many times, I ought to just push a recorder and play it. I don't have a problem with wind power. Wind power is here. It plays a role. I get it. It helps with electricity. It's another avenue that we can use in helping us with the energy. But I also know that we have to have a serious conversation. My bill is very aggressive, but the point is, somewhere in this journey that we're on in the next 4 months, there will be some kind of a deal, a compromise, in regards to what we're going to do in the wind and the wind credits. So the journey started yesterday as far as I'm concerned in regards to credits. I've been very vocal about not only wind, but all the credits. I understand credits, I support credits, but I can tell you in Oklahoma, we've been extremely generous, not only in wind, but in all avenues. And periodically we go in and reform one. So That's what we're doing, and it'll be interesting. And we'll report on those credits as time goes.
Okay, thank you very much.
And other than that, again, Charlie, thank you. And thank you to Phillips 66, and we'll see you all next Friday.
Thank you very much, and we'll do it again right here.
It's 2:37 p.m. Sarah needs a bit of a break, so she stopped by her local Phillips 66 station, where she could take a rest and get her best friend Muffy a bowl of water. And while Jim came to fuel up his car, he realized he needed some fuel himself.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, we'll be here, fueling the neighborhood with performance gas and just about everything else. Phillips 66, proud to be here.
Being a foster grandparent has definitely given me a purpose in life.
I'm a best student because of her.
Foster grandparents are role models, tutors, and friends to children with exceptional needs.
So we go into the classroom and work with those children who are not quite up to their grade level.
Best part of being a foster grandparent volunteer, watching the light up in a kid's eyes.
And you can see their success, and it's really rewarding.
I am so proud of the work.